Mom, Janie said. That was right. His practice girlfriend had just put his mom in tears. What a great son he was. He went to look for her without a word. With heavy feet and a heavier chest, he climbed the stairs, walked down the carpeted hall, and paused outside his mom's bedroom. The door was ajar, and he peered around the edge, finding his mom sitting on her bed. He didn't need to see her face to know she was crying. It was written in her slumped posture, and the way her head hung. The sight destroyed him. No one got to hurt his mom. Not his dad, and not his past girlfriends. Not even Stella.
Maya.
She didn't acknowledge him as he entered the room and padded to her bedside.
I'm sorry about all the things she said.
He tried to keep his voice low, but it came out unnaturally loud.
The piano, the food, Dad.
He didn't know how Stella had managed it, but in just a few minutes, she'd found every sensitive spot his family possessed. Their tight financial situation, his mom's lack of education, and his fucked-up dad, and poked right at them. Accidentally. That was clear as day. Holy shit. She was bad with people. He'd had no idea how bad until tonight. When it was just the two of them, it wasn't like this. His mom grabbed his hand.
Do you think your dad is okay?
I'm sure he's fine. His lips twisted as he imagined his old man lounging on a yacht in the Caribbean next to his latest wife.
Can you email him for Maya?
No. He was never talking to his dad again. His mom took a ragged breath and covered her face.
Your Stella was right. He could be hurt. He's so evil no one would care to help him. Certainly not his new woman. She's only with him as long as the money lasts.
He fisted his hands as a familiar rage threaded through his muscles.
That amount of money should last a long time. Not the way he spends. He thinks he's a big shot. Nothing was ever good enough for him, remember?
Not this again. Michael clenched his jaw as his mom launched into another retelling of a story he'd heard 1,000 times. He sat down next to her and listened with half an ear so he could make the appropriate sounds when she paused. Words like uses women and bad person and liar stuck out, and he couldn't help noticing how well they applied to himself. Look at all the lies he told. Look at what he did to pay the bills. Look at him taking money from Stella, for doing what any other guy would do for... Cold horror soaked into him. This was why it had felt so wrong to accept Stella's proposal. It was wrong. He was taking advantage of her. What kind of man accepted money from a naive woman to teach her things she could learn for free? He'd finally taken the last steps and become his dad. That couldn't be right. That wasn't him. He was better. Their arrangement had to end right now. Where was she? Fuck. Was she waiting for him outside? He shot to his feet before his mom's story was half finished.
I have to go, Maya. I'm sorry about tonight. About everything. There's no need for sorry. If you love her, we'll learn to love her too.
At the mere mention of that word, sweat broke out over his brow.
I don't.
That made his actions worse, didn't it? His mom waved his protest away.
Bring her back another day. Maya won't microwave the plastic when she's here. You shouldn't microwave it any time.
Yeah, yeah. She said the words in such a manner that he knew she would continue doing things her way, regardless of what she'd been told. And Michael swore to himself he'd throw all her plastic away and replace it with something safe. Right after he spoke to Stella.
Good night, Maya.
Drive careful. He escaped the house in record time, but he came up short as he stepped outside. She was gone. He gripped one of the porch's wooden support pillars and dragged in deep breaths as his heart rate slowed and his mind cleared. Cool air, the buzzing of bugs, and the distant whir of a car's motor. Maybe it was best that she wasn't here. He needed time to compose a decent parting speech. Something short but nice. It was him, not her, and... No matter what he said, she was going to cry. The thought twisted his guts into knots. She'd think it was her fault, because of how awkward she was in bed and out. because of the unintentional debacle tonight. He walked to his car and got inside. After he turned the ignition, he sat with his hands on the wheel. He didn't know where to go, her place or his. They needed to talk, but he wasn't ready for her tears on top of his mom's. The new box of condoms on the passenger seat caught his eye. He'd bought countless such boxes over the past 3 years. He hadn't looked forward to opening any of them as much as this one. Because Stella was different. Now he'd be back to using the contents of the box with countless Fridays of women, providing a simple service for fair payment. It didn't hurt or take advantage of anyone. That was better than what his dad did. Michael could do that and still be himself. Too bad he didn't want any of those women like he did Stella. He pushed the box onto the floor and out of sight before heading to his own apartment. Tomorrow. He'd do the right thing. Tomorrow. Chapter 14. Stella completed her bedtime routine in a numb haze. It wasn't until she laid her head down on her pillow that she started crying. It was over now. He'd asked her to be good to his family, and she'd made his mom cry. You couldn't undo something like that. Her gut demanded she tell Michael the truth. Though he wasn't aware of the true extent of them, he already knew about her issues, sensitivities to smell, sound, and touch, her obsession with her work, her need for routine, and her awkwardness with people. What he didn't know was there were labels for that. A diagnosis. But was pity any better than hatred? Right now he thought she was insensitive and rude. But he still viewed her as a regular person who happened to have some eccentricities. With the labels, he might be more understanding. But he'd quit viewing her as Stella Lane, awkward econometrician who loved his kisses. In his eyes, she'd become the girl with autism. She'd be less. With other people, she didn't care what they thought. With Michael, she desperately needed to be accepted. She had a disorder, but it didn't define her. She was Stella. She was a unique person. There was no way to salvage this situation. No way to keep him. She still had to apologize to his mom. She'd never made someone cry before, and it filled her with self-loathing. His mom's evasiveness made sense now that she knew about his dad. Stella wished she could have understood earlier, before she hurt the woman and ruined everything. But all she could control were her future actions, not the past. As the night dragged on, she constructed and reconstructed her apology, recited it over and over in her head. When the sun rose, she dragged herself out of bed and got ready to tackle the day. She drove to the same strip mall she'd gone to yesterday and parked in front of Paris Dry Cleaning and Tailors. As soon as they flipped the sign, she'd apologize and leave. A night of sleeplessness had left her head clouded, and her heart ached from the relentless pressure of her anxiety. Her fingers had been clenched around the wheel so long the joints were locked. She was drained and wanted to get this over with so she could go to the office and lose herself in work. 5 minutes before nine, the sign flipped from closed to open. Taking a deep breath, Stella picked up a second box of chocolates and a bouquet of peach roses and exited her car. Inside, Janie sat behind the front counter. She lifted her attention from the textbook on her lap and blinked in surprise at Stella. From the tense set of her mouth, it was not a good kind of surprise. "Hi, Stella. Michael doesn't work on Saturdays." "I wasn't looking for him." What was the point? They were done. She held up the roses and chocolates. "I brought these for your mom. Is she here?" Janie's expression softened. "Yeah. She's here. May I speak to her, please? She's working in back. I'll take you there." She followed Janie into the back room and stopped in front of a green commercial sewing machine, where Michael's mom was busy feeding fabric beneath the sewing foot with quick efficiency, her glasses perched on the tip of her nose. Stella's muscles tensed and her heart thundered. It was time to do this. She hoped she didn't screw it up. She hoped she said the right thing. Janie murmured something in Vietnamese, and Michael's mom looked up. Her gaze jumped from Janie to Stella. Stella swallowed and forged ahead. I came to apologize for last night. I know I was rude. I'm not good with people. I wanted to thank you for inviting me over to your house. She held out the flowers and chocolate. I got these for you. I hope you like chocolate. Janie snatched the truffles before her mother could touch the box. I do. Michael's mom accepted the flowers and sighed. We still have a lot of food left over from last night. You should try to come again. Stella looked down at her feet. Michael would be horrified if he saw her at his mom's tonight. I need to go. I'm truly sorry about last night. Thank you again. She turned around to leave, but caught sight of Michael's tiny grandma at the couch. The old woman nodded at her, and Stella fumbled on something that was half curtsy, half bow, before she left. Michael walked into the studio and tossed his duffel bag on the blue matted floor next to the other two bags. The fighters in the middle of the room broke apart, took five steps back, switched their swords to their left hands, and bowed.
Look what the cat dragged in, said the fighter on the right.
It was Quan. A helmet obscured his cousin's face, but Michael knew it was him by his voice, and the name embroidered in white on his black sparring gear. Also, Quan was an inch shorter than his baby brother. Kai waved a gloved hand at him and seamlessly switched from sparring to strike drills, using his reflection in the mirror. 10 whip-fast head strikes, 10 wrist strikes, 10 rib strikes, then back to the beginning. 10 more head strikes. When Kai worked out, he worked out. There wasn't downtime. His single-minded focus was impressive, and reminded Michael of Stella. He released a heavy sigh.
Don't usually see you Saturdays. What's up?
Quan asked.
I wanted to get some sparring in,
Michael said, as he scratched an ear. He usually spent Saturdays running and lifting weights, things he could do alone since he was tired of people after what he did on Friday nights. Today, however, he didn't want to be by himself. He knew he'd just think about Stella the whole time. After deliberating through the night and most of today, he still didn't know how to break things off without hurting her. It had to happen, though, and soon. He should call her after he finished sparring and arrange a meeting. Face to face was best.
Suit up, then, Quan said. Class starts in an hour. Teacher took the day off so loser leads class. Little kids class.
That was the perfect incentive to win. Children brandishing sticks was horrifying. You'd think smaller kids were less dangerous, but they were actually the worst. They spun around the studio like tornadoes, hitting beneath your armor or stabbing you in the balls, all by accident. They didn't know any better. Kind of like Stella in social situations. And Kai. As Michael put his gear on, his eyes kept gravitating toward Kai, as he methodically worked through all his strikes, 10 at a time. Always the same number, and always the same order. If Stella ever took up kendo, Michael could see her doing the exact same thing. After last night, there were a lot more similarities between her and Kai than he'd originally thought. Kai never noticed when he tripped upon sensitive conversation topics either. He was also horribly honest, creative in strange ways, and his gaze jumped to Quan as an unexpected suspicion rose.
You asked if I thought Stella was like Kai.
Quan undid the laces behind his head and pulled his helmet off. Dark eyes regarded him steadily.
Yeah, I did. Did she tell you something I should know?
He remembered that night, how it had felt like he'd interrupted something when he'd found them outside the club together.
After she finished hyperventilating from overstimulation, yeah. She told me something,
Quan said.
She was hyperventilating?
He heard himself ask. His stomach dropped, and coldness prickled over him. What kind of ass was he that he hadn't known and hadn't been there for her? He should have been the one, not Quan.
Too many people, Michael. Too much noise. Too many flashing lights. You shouldn't have taken her there.
Everything clicked together then. She's autistic.
You disappointed? Quan asked with a tilt of his head. No.
The word came out hoarse, and he cleared his throat before he continued.
But I wish she'd told me.
Why hadn't she told him? And why had she let him pressure her into going to the club? She must have known what it would do to her. And last night, shit, it must have been awful. The TV blasting, the piano, his sisters shouting, everything new.
She just wants you to like her.
The words punched Michael in the stomach. He did like her, and knowing this didn't impact that at all. She was still the same person, except he understood her better now, at least on a conscious level he did. Subconsciously, he felt like he'd always known. Because he'd grown up with Kai, he knew how to interact with her. He didn't even have to think about it. That had to be why she could relax with him when she couldn't with others. A strange, charged sensation buzzed through him, tensing his muscles and putting his hairs on end. Maybe he didn't have to end their arrangement. Maybe accepting her proposal wasn't taking advantage of her. Because she was autistic, maybe she really could use a practice relationship before she entered a real one. Maybe he was the perfect one for her to practice with. Maybe he could help her for real. He didn't have to take the entire 50 grand. Come to think of it, he didn't have to take any of it. He had credit cards. He could make up the difference next month. By helping her without financial motivation, he'd finally prove he wasn't his dad. He yanked his gear off and tossed it on the floor in a careless heap.
Put that away from me, will you? I have to go.
Stella's phone beeped, dragging her out of the world of her data. Her office materialized, her desk, the computer screens with the command prompt, and all the clever code she'd written. Her windows, the darkness beyond them. The alert on her phone said, "Dinner time." She opened a desk drawer and pulled out a protein bar. Her mother would be angry if she saw Stella eating one of these for dinner, but she didn't care. She just wanted to work. Absently chewing on the cardboardy chocolate mixture, she made small adjustments and refinements in her algorithm. It was good. Maybe some of her best work. Her phone buzzed, and the screen lit with a text message from Michael.
"Is that your office on the third floor with the lights on at 6 p.m. on a Saturday?"
She dropped her protein bar and stood up to look out the window. A familiar form leaned against a lamppost in the parking lot. She immediately dodged out of view, too humiliated to be seen. Her phone buzzed with another message.
"Come down. We need to talk."
She sank back into her chair. This was it. He'd come to end it. Her thumbs shook as she composed a short response. "Just tell me via text message.
I want to talk to you in person."
She threw her phone onto her desk and crossed her arms. She was tired and embarrassed. She didn't need to witness the dissolution of their arrangement in person. Or were there additional things he wanted to talk to her about? More things she'd done wrong? Maybe she shouldn't have apologized to his mom? Had that been creepy and intrusive? Why couldn't she get anything right? She ran her hands over her hair and attempted to slow her breathing. Did she have to apologize for apologizing? The phone buzzed yet again, and she flipped it over with the tip of a trembling finger so she could read it.
"I'm going to stay out here until you come down."
She rubbed at her temple. Her head throbbed, and sweat glued her clothes to her body. She needed to go home and shower. Might as well get this over with. She tossed her once-bitten protein bar into the trash, saved her work, and powered down her computer. Tossing her purse over her shoulder, she shut the lights off and left the room. The empty halls and low-lit cubicles usually comforted her. Tonight, they made her lonely and sad. As she strode to the elevator, she wondered how long it would be before this feeling went away. A week? A month? She wished everything could go back to normal, like before she'd met Michael. These highs and lows in emotion were exhausting. The click of her heels on marble echoed through the reception area, and she made herself push the front doors open and walk outside. Michael shoved away from the lamppost and dug his hands into his pockets, looking like his usual gorgeous self in the glow of the streetlights. "Hi, Stella." "Hi, Michael." Her chest tightened and began aching. She drummed her fingers against her thighs until she caught him watching and fisted her hands.
"My mom told me you stopped by the shop."
That was it. She'd really done the wrong thing. Her heart plummeted and her face threatened to crumple. She schooled her features into place. "I'm sorry if I shouldn't have done that. I couldn't bear knowing I'd hurt her. I never mean to hurt people, but I do it all the time. I'm working on fixing this, but it's so complicated, and I just... He stepped toward her until they were separated by an arm's length.
"What are you talking about?"
She stared down at her shoes. She was so tired. When would this be over so she could go home and sleep? "You're angry because I went to see your mom. That's intrusive."
"I'm not, actually."
She lifted her gaze and found him watching her with sad eyes. "Then, I don't understand."
"As your practice boyfriend, shouldn't I be here? It's getting late."
She took a surprised breath. "After everything I said at your mom's, you still want to have a practice relationship with me?"
"Yeah. Things are complicated with my family, and I should have prepped you ahead of time. I'm sorry I didn't think to do that."
When he wrapped an arm around her waist and pulled her close, she was too stunned to speak. He was apologizing to her?
"Are you okay? You look like you're going to pass out."
She tensed at his nearness, unsure what to do. "I'm fine. Don't worry."
"When was the last time you ate?"
"I don't remember. Oh, I ate something right before you texted."
"What was it?"
She was not telling him. He'd probably act like her mother and chastise her. That was the last thing she needed right now. He brushed his fingers along her jaw before clasping her face in his palm and tipping her head back. A butterfly-light kiss teased her lips.
"You smell like chocolate. Did you have candy for dinner, Stella?"
"Not candy. A protein bar. There are vitamins and stuff in it."
"You're coming with me. Don't argue. I'm going to feed you."
He walked her to her car, which was parked not far away. And by that time, she was simply too tired to protest. The doors unlocked when they sensed the key fob in her purse, and she sat in the passenger seat. She fumbled for the seatbelt, but he caught it and buckled her in with sure movements. He got in on the other side and pulled out of the parking lot. The motion of the car lulled Stella into a drowsy half-slumber, and it was several minutes before she realized he'd left downtown and headed across the freeway. "Where are we going?"
"Back to my mom's."
A surge of adrenaline burned the sleepiness out of Stella's head, and she sat up in her seat, wide awake. "What? Why?"
"There's a lot of food there. My mom had me cook for like 100 people last night."
She adjusted her glasses as her heart started ramping up for takeoff. "I'd really like to go home."
"Do you have anything to eat at your place?"
"I have yogurt. I'll eat it. I promise." He shook his head as he released a tight huff of breath.
"I'll feed you quick, and then take you home."
Before she could think up a suitable response, he pulled into the driveway of the little gray house. When he opened the door, she could hear the same music carrying faintly on the wind. She gripped her seatbelt like a lifeline. "I can't handle the TV tonight," she confessed in a pained whisper. After last night, her usual tolerance was gone. She'd fall apart and scare everyone. Michael would change his mind about the arrangement. She still couldn't believe he didn't want to cancel. Or he'd start walking on eggshells around her, which was worse.
"Hold on a minute."
He dug his phone out of his pocket and typed in something on the screen. Within moments, the music stopped. "You made them turn it off? Won't your mom and grandma be unhappy they can't watch their shows?" Her entire body flamed with embarrassment. She despised it when people had to make changes for her. He gave her a funny look.
It's just TV.
I don't like it when people have to act differently for me.
We don't mind.
He walked around to her side, opened the door, and held his hand out.
Will you come in?
When Stella's small hand landed in his palm, the hard knot of tension in Michael's gut loosened, but an awful brew of guilt and sadness continued to eat at him. She looked terrible. Her bun was off-center, and messy strands framed her drawn face. Her normally bright, expressive eyes were dim, swollen, and shadowed. His heart dipped when he realized she must have cried a lot to make them that way. He'd made her cry. This was not his Stella. Well, the sweatiness of her hand was all Stella. He squeezed gently and led her to the front porch. When he opened the door and prepared to enter, she stiffened and dug in her feet. I forgot to bring something. Google says I'm supposed to bring something. Let me go and...
It's fine, Stella.
He wrapped an arm around her waist and propelled her into the house. Inside the entryway, she shut her eyes and took a breath. He could see her absorbing the silence, feel her body relaxing against his arm.
You know you can always tell me when things bother you, right? Like the TV last night, or the club last week.
Her eyelids fluttered open, but instead of looking at him, she stared off to the side, suddenly tense all over again. Did Quan say something to you? Michael hesitated to answer. Something told him it was extremely important to her that he didn't know. So he did what he'd learned from his dad, even though he hated it. He lied.
Only that the noise and crowd were too much for you. Why didn't you tell me? I wish you had.
I already told you I don't like it when people have to act differently for me.
We could have done something else,
he said in exasperation. The last thing he wanted was to hurt her or make her uncomfortable. Why are there oranges here? She asked, indicating the plate of oranges next to the urn of incense and bronze Buddha statue on the table in the entryway.
Don't change the subject, she sighed.
Fine. It embarrasses me. A lot. All that self-torture. Because it embarrassed her to admit she was different? His insides melted down, and he grabbed her hand and squeezed. Can you tell me about the oranges now? He smiled at her single-mindedness.
It's an offering for the dead. Supposedly they get hungry in the afterlife,
he said with an uncomfortable shrug. As a scientist type, she had to think this was silly. He did too, but it was something Mwai and his mom liked to do. A small smile played over her lips. Do you give them other kinds of food, too? I'd get tired of fruit all the time myself. How about candy? He laughed.
You've had enough candy today.
What do you do with the fruit now that it's been offered? I assume the dead don't actually rise and consume it.
We eat it. I'm not entirely clear on how long you're supposed to wait, but at least a day or so, I think.
She inspected the Buddha statue, angled her head so she could see behind it. Judging by her expression, she was fascinated, and he recalled that she loved martial arts films and drama fever. She did not look condescending or bored or imposed upon. She did not look like his dad.
Do you feel like you've entered the set of an Asian drama? Is that what's going on here?
He asked. This is better. This is real life. She pointed to the box of incense hidden away behind the statue. Can I light one? Will you show me how to do it? I've always wanted to. He rubbed the back of his neck.
I don't actually know how. I mean, I don't remember the order of the lighting and the bowing and all that. When I was little, I refused to do it, and Mwai stopped requesting it.
Does it take very long? She asked with a frown. The corner of his mouth tipped up sheepishly.
I don't think so. No. Let's go say hi to my mom and grandma, and then I'll feed you, okay?
Okay. She followed him through the dining room and into the kitchen, where Sophie and Evie were dishing rice noodles, shredded mint and lettuce, and barbecued beef into large bowls. They looked to be back on speaking terms. Considering their track record of enemies one day, best friends the next, that was about right. Nguai and his mom were slicing up heaps of mangoes at the informal seating area, where they did all their eating. The formal dining table was for presentation only. Nguai was dressed in her favorite black knit cardigan, and his mom wore a Christmas sweater even though it wasn't holiday season.
"Hi, Nguai, Maya,"
Michael said. His mom nodded at him before considering Stella.
"Welcome back. Dinner's ready soon. Sit and eat, ah?"
Stella smiled, but her grip on his hand was fierce. "Sure, thank you. It looks good."
"These two are Sophie and Evie. They're not twins," he said, bringing her to the kitchen island that was covered with food stored in brand new Pyrex containers. "Sophie, the one with that red stripe in her hair, God, when did you get that?" is an interior decorator, and Evie is a physical therapist.
"Hi, Stella," they said at the same time. Mom must have told them about Stella's apology, because it looked like they wanted to make a fresh start. Stella gave a tiny wave. "Hi."
"Is Angie here?" he asked.
"Nope. More work stuff," Evie said. "On a Saturday," Sophie added with a sneer. "Because people work. On Saturdays. All the time."
The sisters faced one another and traded knowing glances. Michael whispered in Stella's ear. "They've been finishing each other's sentences since they were little. I think they're aliens." Stella's lips trembled into another smile, and she leaned into him. Poor shy girl. His family had to be overwhelming for her. And this wasn't even all of them. He tightened his hand around hers and fought the desire to kiss her. Something about the way she turned to him like he was her safe place satisfied caveman needs Michael hadn't known he possessed. He cleared his throat and asked,
"Where are Janie and Maddie?"
"Upstairs doing homework. They'll come down when they're hungry. They both have tests soon."
"They're the two youngest," he explained to Stella. "Maddie is the baby. She's a sophomore at San Jose State."
"I'm going to forget everyone's names." She looked so worried. Michael melted a little. Why did she care? These people couldn't be special to her. They were just his family.
"That's okay. I wish I could."
"Very funny, Michael," Evie said with a roll of her eyes. "You only have to remember me. I'm a PT, so if you get carpal tunnel or something, you know who to look for. Posture is everything."
"Why couldn't you be a doctor then, E?"
his mom asked as she peeled her 10th mango.
"All I wanted was a doctor in the family, and not one of you could do that for me." "Stella's a doctor," Michael said with a grin.
Her eyes rounded into giant buttons. "No, I'm not."
"Yes, you are. You have a PhD that makes you a doctor. And you went to the University of Chicago, the best school for economics in the U.S., probably the world. You graduated magna cum laude."
As he'd known would happen, his mom perked up with interest.
"That's fantastic."
Stella blushed, bringing much-needed color to her cheeks. "How did you..."
"Google stalking."
Her eyes searched his, and a surprised smile hinted at the corners of her mouth. "You stalked me?" He shrugged. It was his turn to feel awkward now.
"Okay, lovebirds, dinner's ready. Come eat," Sophie said.
She set down a bowl filled with noodles that had been cut short with scissors and ultra-thin sliced meat in front of Nguai and kissed her temple like she would a baby. Once they'd seated themselves at the table, Michael watched as Stella carefully mimicked Sophie's food preparation ritual, adding chili sauce, pickled daikon and carrots, bean sprouts, and fish sauce to her bowl of noodles, greens, and beef.
"Have you ever tried this before?" he asked.
She shook her head absently as she mixed everything together and took a bite. Her eyes opened wide, and she grinned as she covered her mouth.
"You're a good cook."
"Michael is very good with his hands," his mom said with a proud nod.
Sophie rolled her eyes before she smirked suggestively and asked Stella,
"Do you agree? Is he good with his hands?"
His mom scowled at Sophie, but Stella merely smiled and nodded. "I think so." Sophie arched her eyebrows and sent Michael an, "Is she for real?" look. As dinner progressed, Michael watched Stella through a new lens provided by his recent discovery. He didn't notice so much when it was just the two of them, but she had trouble with eye contact. She rarely spoke unless someone asked her a direct question, and then her answers were short and to the point. When she listened, however, her focus was the kind of stuff she probably used on complex economic problems. She frowned, hanging on every word like it was of utmost importance. These people mattered to her because they mattered to him. "Where did you grow up, Stella?" his mom asked after they'd moved from Boone to Mangoes. "Atherton? My parents still live there," Stella provided. His mom's eyebrows climbed at the mention of the wealthiest zip code in California. "Do you like babies?" Michael almost dropped his fruit, and his voice was gruff with horror when he said, "Maya!" She shrugged innocently. "You don't have to answer that," he said to Stella. She met his eyes like she hadn't with everyone else. Her facial muscles relaxed, but the intensity of her concentration didn't. Her beautiful mind focused on him. Michael admitted to himself he loved it. Stella lifted a shoulder. "I don't know if I like babies. I haven't been around that many. My parents want grandchildren, though. My mother, mostly."
"That has to be why she keeps setting up blind dates for you," Michael said.
Stella nodded. "I think so."
"Meddling mothers."
At his comment, Stella's lips curved into a smile and her eyes shined. He forgot what they'd been talking about. If he couldn't kiss her soon, he would go mad. "When you get to my age," his mom said, crossing her arms over her chest, "you want to play with babies. It's natural." Sophie jumped to her feet. "Help me with the dishes, Stella?"
"Sure. I'd love to help," Stella said.
"Is there a particular way you do it?"
"Just whatever way gets them clean."
Evie cleared the table as Sophie and Stella piled things into the sink. His mom and Nguai stared at him with serious expressions. He braced himself for something bad.
"She won me at the shop today. It's important to know how to admit when you're wrong. You should keep her," Maya said in Vietnamese.
He shook his head and thinned his lips. "It's not that easy."
"Why?"
"We're too different. She's really smart and makes loads of money."
"You're smart," his mom insisted.
He rolled his eyes.
"You're not like your dad wanted, but that doesn't mean you're not smart. And you don't make as much because you're busy helping me at the shop. I told you I don't need you anymore. You let so many opportunities pass because of me. I don't want that for you, Michael. And I don't want you to lose this girl, either. She's a good one. Keep her."
"It's not that simple."
"It is. She likes you. You like her."
If he had less control, he would have pointed out his mom's relationship with his dad. But that was hitting below the belt. His dad loved his mom, in his own way. But he also loved cheating. Michael would never understand why his mom took his dad back every single time.
"Just promise to try, all right? I like this one," his mom said.
Michael could have laughed. Of all the girls he'd ever brought home, she liked the one he couldn't have. His client. His rich, highly educated, beautiful client, who was paying him to help her learn how to get someone better.
"You're just saying that because she's doing dishes."
Michael knew the way to his mom's heart, and it wasn't food. It was cleaning. Doing dishes. He didn't have to do dishes because he cooked. For whatever reason, none of the women in this house cooked. He'd had to learn in order to survive.
"She doesn't mind working," his mom said. "That's important."
Nguai agreed.
For a moment, the three of them watched as Stella washed bowls, rinsed them, and handed them to Sophie to dry. She'd rolled her sleeves up and worked with great attention, listening and smiling distractedly, as Sophie chatted with her.
"Take her home," Nguai said. "She looks tired."
His mom nodded. "Take her home." He pushed away from the table and went to wrap his arms around Stella's waist. Because he couldn't resist, he ran his lips down her neck so she shivered. The soapy sponge paused in mid-scrub, and her expression was confused as she gazed at him over her shoulder. He slid a hand down her delicate forearm,
and hijacked the sponge from her. He finished washing the frying pan and the rest of the dishes with her in front of him, occasionally pausing to kiss her ear, her neck, or her jaw. Sophie slanted him a go-get-a-room look as he handed her the last colander, one of many that he'd made his mom promise never to stick in the microwave again, and he could tell she was dying to say something dry and caustic, but was holding back because she didn't want to embarrass Stella. Stella's eyelids had gone heavy, and her nails dug into the tile counter as she tried unsuccessfully not to respond to him. "Ready to go home?" he whispered. She nodded. They said their goodbyes and piled into Stella's car, and he pressed the Tesla's on button. Before Stella could buckle her seatbelt, he asked,
"What are you seeing in terms of living arrangements and frequency of visits?"
"What do most couples do when they're in committed relationships?"
"They live together, and they see each other every day. Is that what you want?"
It was strange hearing himself say the words out loud. These were things he'd spent his entire adult life avoiding. But with Stella, he might be ready for them, if she wanted them, too. She rubbed her cheek on her shoulder. "I want that, then. I have a guest bedroom you can use, but if you're uncomfortable staying with me, I understand. Not all couples live in the same house."
"What if I want to share your bed, Stella?"
he asked in a low tone, despite how much he wanted to help her and prove he wasn't his dad. He wasn't sure he could do this if sex was off the table. He wanted her too much. Besides, most of her problems stemmed from lack of confidence. Bed was a great place to work on that. "You don't have to do that," she said.
"That wasn't the question. I know I don't have to."
Staring out the passenger window, she said, "My bed is open to you if you want it. But you know where my skill levels are at. That hasn't changed since our last time together." He smiled at that. She sounded worried about pleasing him, something his clients almost never cared about.
"Let's seal the deal."
"Oh, all right." She pulled a hand out from under her thigh and held it out toward him.
"We're going into a practice relationship. I think we should kiss on it."
She locked eyes with him as her lips parted in surprise, and that was all the invitation he needed. Leaning across the center divide, he kissed her. He meant for it to be a seductive, slowly inflaming kind of kiss, but the sighing sound she made drove him straight out of his mind. He took her mouth with hungry strokes of his tongue. She wound her fingers through his hair, scraped them down his chest and abdomen, and tucked them into his jeans. Yes, finally they could go back to checking boxes. Knuckles rapped against the driver's side window. A muffled voice spoke incoherent words. He launched himself back into his seat before powering the window down. Sophie crossed her arms and tapped her bare foot on the pavement before she bent down, narrowed her eyes, and clearly mouthed the word pervert at him. "Mom wanted me to remind you your headlights are lighting up Mwai's room so she can't sleep."
"Sorry. Forgot. We'll head home now."
Peering into the car, she said, "Good night, Stella. I hope we see you again soon." Stella swiped at the loose hairs falling over her face and cleared her throat with a cough. "Good night, Sophie." Sophie sent him one last reproving look and sauntered back into the house. Seconds later, his phone lit up with rapid text messages from Sophie. "Geez, Michael, go easy on her. You'll scare her away and we all really like her. Honestly, in the driveway, what are you, 13? He choked on a laugh and handed the phone to Stella so she could read the messages. She bit down on the tip of a fingernail as she grinned. "I'm not scared." He ran a hand through his hair, took a deep breath, and adjusted the painfully stiff flesh rising against his fly.
"Let's get you home."
He drove with gratuitous disregard of the law through the empty residential streets, envisioning himself peeling her librarian clothes off and pinning her against the wall, the floor. He didn't care where. It was going to be so good with Stella. Spectacular, even. He was going to... He glanced at Stella, trying to decide what to do first, and his hopes plummeted. He was going to carry her into her house and put her to bed. In the scant minutes since they'd left his mom's, she'd fallen fast asleep, her head lulled to the side, and her glasses sat on her nose at a crooked angle. She didn't so much as flinch when her garage cranked open and her tires squeaked over the epoxy floor. He tried to shake her awake, but she didn't react. Her breathing remained deep and even, her body relaxed. With a sigh, he lifted her out of the car and headed toward her bedroom, their bedroom, as of tonight. Chapter 15. Stella awakened by slow degrees. She registered the sunlight on her face, the distant barking of a neighborhood dog, and Michael's delicious smell. It was all around her, warm and concentrated, and she burrowed into the sheets with a happy sigh. A heavy weight over her side kept her from rolling the sheets around her like a burrito, and she frowned. What was that? She lifted the blankets and stared in shock at the muscular arm wrapped around her waist, her naked waist. She'd slept in her bra and panties last night, and she hadn't gone through her night routine. She was covered in nastiness. Her mouth, it was probably forming an ecosystem for antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria. She shot up in bed, her entire being focused on running straight to the bathroom. Floss, brush, shower, pajamas. Floss, brush, shower, pajamas. Michael yanked her back down and kissed her nape. Not yet. I'm gross. I have to get clean. He sucked on her neck and pulled her hips back as he rocked forward, making her achingly aware of the firm flesh prodding against the backs of her thighs, through his boxers. Her body went into total system failure. Her limbs weakened. Between her thighs she flushed and tingled with wanting. The intensity of her desire frightened and embarrassed her. She needed to be in control of herself and her body. Control was gone. Good morning. His voice was a husky rasp that sent shivers down her spine. A hand dipped inside her bra and cupped her breast. He stroked the tip until it ached and pinched, sending a burst of sensation straight to her core. When he headed downward, smoothing a hand over her belly, her stomach muscles clenched. I want to touch you here. He palmed her sex with a bold grasp, and the heat of his touch spread through the cotton of her panties, searing her. She gripped his wrist, fully intending to pull him away, but her hands refused to cooperate. His forearm was firm with defined muscle, his skin smooth, utterly distracting. Is that permission? He whispered. She'd given him permission last night. She wanted this, but she didn't know how to handle this side of herself. Her body told her to say yes, her mind told her to say no. Her body won the fight, and her hips arched against his hand. He edged the crotch of her panties aside. He kissed her nape as he traced the slick entrance to her body with his fingertips. A sharp breath tore from her lungs. Panic and pleasure collided. You're wet already, Stella. You're like a Lamborghini. 0 to 60 in 2.7 seconds.
You like Lamborghinis?
She tried desperately to cling to coherent thought. She needed to think at all times, to weigh her actions and her words. When she let go, she always made mistakes. She did the wrong thing, hurt people, mortified herself. He continued touching her lightly, trailing around and around her opening in maddening circles. His teeth scraped against her neck before he licked and kissed her. Goosebumps spread over her skin.
Yes, I like them. No, don't get me one, he said.
Why not? She rubbed her feet against his shins, dug her fingernails into his arm. Push him away. Pull him closer. Regain control. Let go.
It doesn't suit my lifestyle. And my mom would be very, very curious how I got it.
He emphasized the word very with barely there strokes over her clitoris. Her sex spasmed and trembled at the edge of release. He bit her earlobe.
You're about to go off, aren't you? That's all it took.
It's because I've been fantasizing about you ever since last Friday. Oh, God. What did she just said?
He removed his touch and sat up. His expression was soft as he brushed tendrils of hair away from her face.
What does fantasy Michael do?
Everything.
He laughed before his eyes went intense.
Does he make you come with his mouth? Real Michael wants to do that.
She squirmed as the need to please him warred with her inhibitions. That was one thing fantasy Michael hadn't done.
I'm more interested in giving oral sex than receiving it.
Maybe we should work on it,
he said in an unusually subdued tone.
I'm not the only guy who loves going down on women.
She sank her teeth into her lip and fisted the sheets.
Women. Plural.
For a regular man, that meant anywhere from 1 to 10. Maybe 20. For Michael?
Hundreds.
It might even be thousands, for all she knew. A new type of anxiety weighed down on her. Could she possibly measure up against all of his past clients?
I don't want to disgust you.
You won't.
How do I make it good for you? Are some women better at receiving oral sex than others? What do they do?
She badly wanted to be good at it. She wanted to blow all the others out of the water.
But there had been so many of them.
What is going on in that beautiful brain of yours?
He asked in bafflement. I think...
No more thinking,
he said as he touched a thumb to her lips. He ran warm hands from her shoulders down to her wrists, interlaced their fingers, and squeezed their palms together. Her muscles tensed as she worried she wasn't responding the right way. What was she supposed to do? Now that she understood he wanted her to feel pleasure, she wanted to give it to him, wanted to make him happy.
Stella, you're locking up on me.
His eyes searched hers, worried now.
I'm sorry.
She felt the sweat between their hands and fingers, and winced. Her heart pounded. She was screwing this up. He gathered her in his arms and held her, smoothing a hand through her hair in slow sweeps.
This is because of oral sex? We don't have to have it.
Stella pressed her forehead to his neck and breathed in his scent. By slow degrees, she relaxed into his embrace.
I'm very competitive.
He brushed a kiss against her temple.
Okay, but how does that factor into anything?
It means I want to please you more than all your other clients have.
Stella, I'm the one who's being paid to please here.
I'm not paying you for sex anymore. Remember?
He made a frustrated growling sound and held her tighter.
What am I going to do with you? I have you hot and naked in my arms and you're still not ready.
She sighed and rested against him. She idly traced the dragon scales on his bicep. We could floss, brush, shower, and dress. He threw the covers off.
Let's do it then. Don't you have any casual clothes?
Michael swept her damp hair to the side and kissed her neck as she stared at her wardrobe, trying to make her clothing selection for the day. I didn't need them when I started working, so I gave them all away, she said.
You had them, though? Or were they all knee-length skirts and button-downs?
As he spoke, his arms stole around her bathroom-clad waist and hugged her to his naked chest. Her body couldn't decide if it wanted to relax or stiffen. She suspected he was seducing her. It was almost working. It was definitely making her mind fuzzy, but that was a good thing. He was distracting her from her headache and the fact that she was terribly off schedule today, something that normally filled her with irritation and frustration until she could start over and do things right. They were skirts and button-downs.
How do you know me so well?
His hot breath fanned over her ear as he chuckled.
You are my favorite puzzle lately. I want to see you in sundresses, Stella.
I don't have any.
It's Sunday. We could go shopping.
She turned around, feeling a spike of anxiety at the thought of going out in public, going somewhere new, and worst of all,
trying on itchy, scratchy clothes that were probably dusted with rat feces from warehouse floors. Can you make me sundresses? I was serious when I said I wanted custom Michael designs. I'll have to get anything I buy seriously altered before I can wear it anyway. Instead of answering, he pulled a pink shirt off its hanger and inspected the inside seams. French seams. The fabric is... He rubbed it between his fingers. It's plain cotton.
I love cotton. Silk, too. I don't mind synthetic fabrics like acrylic and lycra, as long as they're soft. But I can't stand crisp denim or wool or cashmere or angora. A pleased smile curved over his mouth as he continued to check out the construction of her shirt.
My practice girlfriend might know more about textiles than I do. Impressive.
His compliment made her feel warm and bubbly, but her mind snagged on her practice girlfriend title. She didn't like it, namely the practice half, but she knew she had to be realistic about what she could and couldn't have. Better to focus on the irony of her tactile defensiveness, leading them to a common interest. She restrained herself from reading off fabric types and qualities like an encyclopedia. He hung her shirt back up neatly and stepped in front of her, resting his hands on her hips.
I really want you in sundresses, Stella. I love the pencil skirts. They do fantastic things to one of my favorite parts of you. But they've also been torturing me.
How? Why?
They don't let me do this.
Watching her with heated eyes, he drew the end of her bathrobe up. It made a brushing sound against his jeans as he bared her thighs to the cool air. His palm scraped up the outside of her leg, paused at her hip, and reached behind her to squeeze her rear, making need shock through her body. The brown curls between her thighs were visible, and she caught him eyeing them darkly. Without asking, without hesitating, without giving her time to think, he slipped his hand over her hip and down to her pelvis. Daring fingertips threaded through the hair and massaged the peak of her sex. Her skin burned where he touched her, and her knees weakened. She braced herself on his shoulders.
That's my girl,
he whispered as he leaned down to kiss her. The taste of his clean mouth was heavenly, and a high-pitched sound hummed from her throat as she kissed him back. She tried to kiss him as well as he'd taught her, but she couldn't concentrate. His fingers were doing diabolical things to her. It was all she could do to stand, and she wasn't doing a good job of it. Each stroke of his fingers melted her a little more. She was starting to tremble. Without breaking the kiss, he picked her up and carried her to the bed. The feel of her back sinking into the down blankets brought her to reality. They were finally going to do this. Sex, without structure, without a plan. She was going to be bad at it, and he'd have to show her what to fix, how to improve, and she'd try very hard to take the criticism in stride even though it humiliated. He tore her bathrobe open, and his mouth fastened on her nipple, drawing deeply. She arched into him with a gasp that turned into a moan when his hand slid between her thighs again and stroked her. Her sex clenched so hard it hurt.
Shh.
He whispered against her breast. One long finger slipped into her, and grateful sighs and murmurs tumbled from her lips. That was exactly what she needed. He worked a second finger in, and the stretching sensation had her head falling back. No, this was what she needed. Her heels dug into the bed as she pushed into the penetration. His fingers eased in and out, curling against her to breathtaking effect. When he removed his touch, she couldn't bite back a protesting sound.
Michael, more, I...
He lifted his glistening fingers to her lips and sucked them into his mouth. The intensity of his eyes coupled with his devilish grin had her bunching the blankets in her hands as her core tightened on itself. The caresses resumed with deep, slow thrusts. It was good. So good. But he wasn't touching her where she needed it. Her hips writhed as she tried to relieve the growing ache. When he withdrew again, she stroked her hands down her stomach in rampant frustration. But her own touch did nothing to excite her. He gripped her knees, pulled them apart to bare her sex to his eyes. His chest expanded on a sharp inhalation, and his dragon tattoo rippled, his throat worked on a loud swallow.
I should have known you'd have the prettiest little...
Michael, don't say it, she said quickly.